Spirit, verse 16. And as we go through these verses, whenever we have any of the difficulties, explain them in them, rather than complain to others about our problems or bellyache and feel sorry for ourselves, then let's trace the source of our difficulties to our self-grasping ignorance and our self-centered thought and blame it and make a determination to avoid following those two defiled attitudes in the future. And then as a way to specifically counteract them, do the taking and giving meditation. So I may not say that after each verse, but this is the way that we should be thinking with all of them. Okay, so verse 16, when I become separated from my helpful and loving friends, it is the wheel of evil karma returning on me for my luring away others' companions. From now on, I shall never estrange others from their companions. Okay, so when I become separated from my helpful and loving friends, an experience all of us have had, yet when we have it, we always feel like no one else has ever hurt as bad as we do. So separated from loving friends, it could be divorce, marriage not working out, a relationship not working out. It could be death, somebody dies of natural causes, or disease. It could be war, and what people go through in wartime situations, being separated from their families. If you read the stories of some of the people in the Holocaust and what they went through, and I think the same thing in Rwanda, people being separated from their families and trying to find them again. Even in Iraq, you know, people gone missing under Saddam and probably gone missing under Bush as well. So being separated from the people that they care about in wartime situations. Or think about refugees and people fleeing a country as quickly as they can to get out and being separated from their dear ones, children from their parents and spouses from each other and, you know, relatives, friends from each other. Difficult political situations. You know, like in China during the Cultural Revolution, or in Russia, the Soviet Republics during Stalin. You know, so many families being separated, living in fear from each other. Okay. Also in situations where our friends and dear ones move away, you know, we build a life together with them, and then dear friends move away, their company transfers them somewhere else, or they get, you know, tired of living in one area and go to move in another one. Also situations where we're separated from our spiritual teachers, you know, we have visa problems or all sorts of difficulties where we can't meet our teachers, you know, visa problems where they want us to leave the country, or we get sick, or you know, lots of difficulties meeting our teachers. So all these kinds of situations where we're separated from the people that we care about. And it happens all the time in cyclic existence, because whatever comes together is bound to separate. Yeah, it's quite natural. Okay, so this is when this situation happens to us. It is the wheel of evil karma returning on me for luring away others' companions. So in the past, what we've done is done things that have broken up marriages, you know, having relationships, you know, with somebody in a marriage, or if we're in a relationship, having, you know, affair outside of it, just doing or nasty things in general that break up marriages or break up close friends. Okay, so it causes us to be separated from the people we care about. We're separating teachers and disciples criticizing one to the other or making it difficult for them to meet, doing, you know, politics within a Dharma group that make teachers and disciples not meet each other or be separated. So, you know, like creating factions, yeah, and this happens in spiritual communities. We're not immune from it, you know. People creating one faction against another faction. If you're a leader having unfair policies, you know, that separate people from their dear ones, like I was saying the Chinese government did during the Cultural Revolution, sending children out to the countryside, sending parents into prison, you know, or what happened during World War II, so many families being separated from each other. And then even they went back to their own villages after the war to try and find their dear ones. The other people in the villages didn't want them there, and they got chased out again and became refugees. So if you're, you know, a leader and you cause this kind of dissension, or even if you're somebody, you know, who supports it and favors it, it creates the karma for oneself to be separated from one's dear ones. Or disharmonious speech. Now, where we talk about people behind their back to split them up and separate them, make them mad at each other. Sometimes happens in families out of jealousy. You know, you're jealous of a brother or sister, so you say blah, 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 blah to another relative about them, and, you know, it separates people. Or if people are separated already, we continue that. We prevent them from making up. Yeah. And, you know, here again we have to watch in situations. If there's, let's say, a woman whose husband was beating her and they're separated and she's all of a sudden having an attack of attachment for him and wants to go back, you're saying to her, hey, you know, remember what he did and take care and be strong. You know, in a way it could be seen as separating her from her husband, but your motivation isn't to separate them. Your motivation is to protect her from getting harmed and mistreated. So it's a different kind of situation. You know, that's why we always have to look at these things, at exactly what the situation is, what the motivation is. Okay, so when this kind of problem comes to us, being separated, from dear ones, then instead of moaning and groaning, to rejoice that it happens and say, oh good, you know, it's happened, this is my negative karma ripening, and by it ripening now, it's getting purified, it's getting consumed, and this same karma could have ripened in a really horrible suffering later on, but, you know, it's ripening in this suffering now of being separated from those I care about, and I can survive this, you know, knowing that it has some meaning and purpose. Okay, and then it says, from now on I shall never estrange others from their companions. And so to really make a strong determination never to separate, you know, people who are friends, where it's a healthy friendship and a beneficial friendship, you know, make that strong determination. Okay, then the verse 17, you know, well, you know, this kind of thing, I think we should all be thinking about examples of in our own life of this situation. You know, I don't need to make specific examples in each of these verses, because I think some of them are, we've all had happen to us, so we should make our own example when we meditate on it. Then verse 17, when the holy or sublime beings become displeased with me, it is the wheel of evil karma returning on me for renouncing the noble ones and seeking bad companions. From now on, I shall renounce all evil friends. Okay, so when sublime beings or holy beings become displeased with me, okay, so this refers in particular to our spiritual teachers, or it could be, you know, those under whose guidance we follow, you know, if you're training in Vinaya, senior monastics who you trust and, you know, who are committed to take care of you. So when these people become displeased with us, okay, our tendency is to blame them. Yeah, they're closed-minded, they're insensitive, they're demanding too much. You know, they're not equal towards everybody. They play favorites. It's interesting because in the Vinaya, there's lots of vows in the Bhikshu and Bhikshuni vows talking about this kind of thing, of accusing the Sangha of playing favorites, you know, or accusing, let's say, the manager of the monastery from giving the goods to her friends but not to somebody else, okay? So all sorts of situations where, you know, our instinctual reaction is, it's not my fault, it's them, yeah? And, you know, so that's why there are these vows against making those kind of accusations, so that we turn it back on ourselves and see. Okay? So, because our tendency is really to, you know, we feel like, you know, we're just sweet, innocent, charming, so good-natured, so wonderful to be with. And besides, it's our teacher's job to take care of us and pamper us and say sweet things to us when we're feeling down and, you know, pat us on the back even when we haven't done a wonderful job so that our self-confidence increases. And they're not doing it. How can they not do it? This is their job. Yeah, so we can get quite indignant about the whole thing. Okay, so to remember when this happens, instead of, you know, doing our old trip of blaming the other person, to recall that this is the weapon of evil karma returning on me for renouncing the noble ones and seeking bad companions. Okay, so what have we done under the influence of our ignorance and self-centeredness? You know, we've given up seeking the advice and counsel of noble ones, of those who are skilled and knowledgeable in the Dharma. And instead, we've sought out bad companions, people who are entertaining, who are fun, who please our ego, who, you know, distract us. Okay, so this kind of action, it also comes from not respecting our spiritual mentors or not following their advice, competing with them or holding resentment to them, you know, so our mind making up some kind of conflict stories about our teachers. Whenever our mind does this, we're digging a hole for ourselves, you know. And the thing is that we usually don't realize it, you know. We usually think that our emotions are justified, our emotions are correct, and it's, you know, the teacher's fault, it's the senior sangha's fault. Okay, and so you can see that when we have this reaction to the situation, we're creating the exact same karma again that got us into this situation to start with. Mm. So you can see why it's called the wheel of evil karma, because the karma that's ripening to us on us is you know, the karma we created, and then we react to the situation by doing the same thing to get the same result again, you know. I mean, just really, you know, when you were showing me the weed whacker yesterday and saying how it comes near the metal pole, but because it's plastic, it doesn't hurt the pole or get hurt so much itself. But us, we're like a weed whacker made of metal, and you come near something metal or concrete, and, you know, we just grind ourselves, you know, and ruin ourselves. You know, by following the self-centered mind. Okay. Also, in renouncing the noble ones and seeking evil companions or bad companions, it means, you know, that you have the opportunity to do some Dharma activity, but then we choose instead to, you know, go out with our friends or, you know, go camping, go on this vacation or that vacation. And, you know, it's difficult. This one's difficult because we think, oh, bad friends, those must be people with horns on their head who, you know, are trying to lure us away, and they're evil looking and sinister looking, and, you know, they're just going to come out and get us. But my teachers always say, when we talk about evil friends, very often those are people who superficially and in a worldly way seem to care about us. You know, those are the people who, when you go into work and say you're going on a meditation retreat, they look at you with quizzically and say, why don't you get a life? What kind of way is that to spend your vacation time going and sitting in a meditation retreat? You know, you should go to Hawaii, or you should, you know, go on this nice, you know, hiking trip, or go biking here and there, or, you know, go to the Caribbean. And, you know, they're people who seem to really care about us, who want us to have worldly pleasure and worldly happiness. But because they don't know about the Dharma, they don't have the view of many lifetimes. They don't have an understanding of karma and how we create the cause for our future lifetimes. And they don't understand what a precious human life is and how valuable it is and how rare it is to get. You know, so it's not like they have the intention, oh, I'm going to, you know, get this person. No, their intention is seemingly good, you know, and from their own side it seems that way. But because they don't have a Dharma perspective, the advice they give is not wise advice. You know, if we're upset, for example, and we go to them, they'll take sides with us and say, you're absolutely right, that other person is treating you awful, and you have a right to be angry, and you should go tell that person off and stick up for yourself and, you know, go complain to the manager and tell everybody else in the office how lousy and uncooperative that person is. You know, so that person will seemingly be on our side and stick up for us, but you can see the advice they're giving us is advice to create, you know, dissension in the workplace, and giving us advice to, you know, to create the karma of harsh speech. Yeah. So even though, you know, in a worldly way, it seems like they're our friends and on our side, from a Dharma perspective, those are the people that we call, you know, bad companions or bad friends. So it's a whole different adjustment that we have to make when we start understanding karma, a different adjustment in terms of our the meaning of friendship, what the purpose of friendship is, what qualities we look for in friends, what kind of relationships we want to have with other people. All of that changes as we get deeper and deeper into the Dharma. And many people at some point go through a little bit of a crisis about this, you know, because it's like, oh, all my friends that I used to go drinking and drugging with and have such a good time, well, you know, I'm trying to stop drinking and drugging because I get uncontrolled. And if I don't drink and drug with these people, there's no basis for our being together. They're going to think I'm prudish, or they're going to think I'm conceited. Or we always do this when we get together, so what are we going to do? How am I going to be friends with them if I don't drink and drug? And does that mean that I'm not friends with them? Who am I going to be friends with, folks, if I'm not friends with those people? You know, we've been childhood friends, or, you know, buddies in the bar for 10 years. Who are going to be my friends? It's not these people. And so at a certain point, sometimes people go through a little bit of a crisis about this, you know. And that can be like a real watershed for people in their practice, because they really start thinking deeply about friendship and about the purpose of their life and about karma. And some people at that point, you know, their attachment to their old friends and their old situation is very strong, you know, and a mistaken sense of loyalty to those people. And so they'll go back to those people and abandon the Dharma. Yeah. Or other people will say, oh, well, now I'm beginning to understand the Dharma, and I'm seeing that these relationships with my old friends have to change because, you know, the Dharma is actually more important in my life, and I don't want to fall under the sway of their influence, you know. So then you start creating new friendships with people who have Dharma values. It doesn't mean that you throw all your old friends out and, you know, oh, you're a stinky old friend with worldly values, I can't stand you. You know, it doesn't mean that. Of course we still have compassion for these people. We're still courteous to them. We can still be friendly. But we begin to assess their advice and their values in a different way and become wiser in terms of, you know, whose advice we follow, who we trust in talking over our problems with. Yeah? And so we start to change. So this, you know, very often for people, it's quite a critical point where, you know, some people just kind of, you know, abandon the Dharma at that point. Other people start to shift their friendships. And, you know, like I said, doesn't mean abandoning all of your old friends, but the relationship does change. Yeah. So, and, you know, this is one step that you go through when you're practicing the Dharma. Yeah? And for those of us who didn't grow up with Dharma friends, it can be a hard thing, but it's, you know, it's what we practice with. It's what we deal with. Okay? So like I said, doesn't mean you just kind of, you know, when it says here, from now on I shall renounce all evil friends, it doesn't mean, you know, that you say to your family, get away, you're an evil friend. You know, you want me to go to the movies with you, get out of here. You know, you can, you're still loving to your family, but, you know, you have different values, you have different boundaries, you relate to them in a different way. That kind of thing. Okay, so following evil friends, you know, people who say, oh, don't go do retreat, you know, come go skiing with me, or don't go to Dharma class, come to the theater and the concert with me. When we follow those friends, okay, that's our responsibility. We can't blame our friends for luring us away. It's our responsibility when we follow them. And when we do, it causes us not to meet with spiritual teachers in the future, or even if we meet them, it causes us to have difficult relationships with them. Okay, and we can see that sometimes. Sometimes you see people who are really interested in the Dharma, but they just don't seem to meet a teacher that they're able to click with, or they meet a teacher that they click with, but they, you know, whatever they do, there always seems to be something not right about the relationship, or their mind seems to be continuously disturbed by it. So this is the kind of result that comes from following evil friends. So it's something to really pay attention to, because meeting qualified and good spiritual teachers is really important. Why? Because we tend to follow the instructions of other people. I mean, we tend to follow the instructions of people we respect. And if we start respecting spiritual teachers who are not qualified, then very often we get wrong instructions, we practice in a wrong way, and we get very tangled up. You know, there's the story of Angulimala at the time of the Buddha. You know, and his teacher told him to go out and bring him as an offering the finger bones of 1,000 different people. So Angulimala, to please his teacher, you know, I mean, he was blinded by his own ignorance. This, of course, is an extreme example, but it shows the story. Blinded by his own ignorance, respect for the wrong kind of teacher, following the advice of that teacher, so he went out and started killing people. And he killed 999 people to get their finger bones. And the last person, you know, he saw the Buddha walking, and he was, you know, chasing after the Buddha to kill him. Okay, and that's when the Buddha just kept walking slowly, and Angulimala was running after him, not able to catch up, and saying to the Buddha, stop, stop. And the Buddha said, I have stopped. You know, I've stopped all the defilement. And then through talking with Angulimala, he, you know, changed his mind, and Angulimala ordained. And I think he eventually purified that karma. But you can see, if you meet the wrong kind of teacher, because we're so ignorant, then, oh boy, I mean, you just can get so stuck in confusion and difficulties. And you see that with many people. Okay, so you know, when we let ourselves be distracted by the advice of people who don't give us good advice, and when we seek their company in preference to the company of of the wise, then, you know, we have to take responsibility for our actions and recognize that this is the result that we're creating for ourselves, is to be separated from good teachers, or to even we find good teachers, have difficulty in our relationships with them. Yeah. There's one of my teachers, I have great difficulty seeing him. I mean, in the early years it was very easy, you know, there weren't so many people. Now he has thousands of disciples. But, you know, there's some kind of karma where even there's an appointment for a certain time, it doesn't happen. I mean, one thing after another, just unbelievable. One time I was working on a project for him, and it was even, you know, come at 10:30 at night to work on it, and I got there, and the attendant kind of said, "What are you doing here? We haven't eaten dinner yet." And it's like again and again, it was like so obvious to me that this is some kind of karmic obstacle, you know, that I created myself, because it just kept happening and happening and happening. And so, you know, at a certain point I had to say, yeah, this is, you know, instead of getting angry at the attendants or whatever, which is sometimes hard to not to do, but, you know, realizing, hey, this is my karma that's making this situation happen, you know. Because especially, you know, I mean, it really clicked that one time when one attendant said, come at 10:30, and then the other attendant said, what are you doing here? It was like, this is clearly not the attendant's fault. This is clearly my karma. Yeah. And so, okay, I got to accept it and do some purification around this. Or I can see there's one of the prisoners that I've been trying to see in Oregon. He wanted so much to take refuge in precepts. We've had incredible obstacles. I still haven't met him. The first time I went to the prison, I got in the IMU, that's like the ADSEG, the solitary confinement unit. Difficult to get in. He was going to be the third inmate I met with. I met with the first two, and then they told me I was out of time. I couldn't go any longer. Then I came back 6 months later. We had it all set up for 9 o'clock in the morning. I confirmed it with the chaplain the day before. Got there at 9 o'clock. The guard wouldn't let us in because they said it was 8 o'clock. And then they said, when we went in to question it more, they said, well, actually, the chaplain had sent in the papers but hadn't signed them, so you couldn't have gotten in anyway. So then I called the chaplain, made the whole arrangement again to go in another day, and this day I called the day before to the guards who were supposed to let us in to make sure they had it on record. They didn't have it on record. You know, then recently I sent this one inmate a book. The prison returned it. You know, I mean, there's clearly some kind of obstacle. We write, and we have very good letter writing, but there's some obstacle to meeting there. Yeah? So we can see, again, that's an extreme example, but it shows us, you know, what are the situations our own karma creates. Okay, then verse 18. When others assail me with exaggeration, denigration, and so on, it is the weapon of evil karma returning on me for disparaging the sublime beings. From now on, I shall never disparage others through exaggeration and denigration. Okay, so when others assail me with exaggeration, denigration, and so on. So, for example, people falsely accusing us, maybe they accuse us of breaking our vows, or accuse us of some kind of unethical behavior, or even they don't accuse us directly, they insinuate it to other people, you know, insinuate we did something negative, or they're jealous of us, and so they put us down, you know, and make up lies or whatever to put us down and denigrate us. Situations where we're scapegoated, where, you know, yeah, scapegoated. Yeah, when we're blamed for others' misdeeds, where everybody gangs up against us, and it seems like nobody understands us. you know, where there's just huge misunderstandings, and so people are, we feel like people are making a big deal out of nothing and blaming us for things that we didn't do. Okay, so when this happened, instead of, you know, getting upset and depressed and everything like that, say, this is the weapon of evil karma returning upon me. Okay, what have I done in the past? Disparage sublime beings. Okay, so in the past, what I've done is I've accused people of, you know, breaking their precepts, or I've insinuated that people have broken their precepts, or I've scapegoated them, or I've been jealous of them and talked badly, you know, behind their back, and so on. So, you know, we should really be careful not to accuse people of breaking vows when they haven't, and not to criticize people's good qualities because we're jealous of them. You know, if you're in a monastic community, actually we have, part of our vows is if we think somebody has broken a vow and we don't bring it up in the community, we've broken a vow. But we also have a vow of not insinuating somebody's broken a vow when they haven't, and not accusing them of breaking a vow when they haven't. So it's a very fine line to walk, you know, because in community, it's, you know, we're supposed to kind of be able, you know, to bring these things up, not out of resentment, not so-and-so broke a vow and I don't like them and now they're going to get it, you know, but out of compassion you bring it up to the community, because if you bring it up, then this person, you know, has a chance to purify their karma. And they have a chance to repent and purify. And if we keep their transgression hidden, they don't have that opportunity. Yeah? In fact, in the Bhikshuni vows, one of our root vows is if, you know, another Bhikshuni has broken a root vow and we keep it hidden, then we have lost our ordination. It's really serious. You know, it's not just playing around. So, you know, and the whole reason is that, you know, if we know somebody has done something negative in the community situation, we should bring it up. We don't go and gossip about that person to lay people. You know, Sangha affairs are Sangha affairs. They stay within the Sangha. You know, what often happens is rather than bring it up in the Sangha community, because if you bring up somebody's transgression, then they're going to get mad at you, then you go and talk badly about them to the lay people. But that's totally the opposite of what we should be doing. You know, Sangha matters remain in the Sangha and are dealt with in the Sangha, because it can be harmful to gossip about these kinds of things to lay people. It damages their faith. Okay? But when we bring it up in a Sangha situation, we shouldn't do it with animosity or, you know, in an accusing way or elaborating, exaggerating the person's thing, but really out of compassion, because we want them to be able to purify and correct their mistake. So it's a very delicate line, and sometimes bringing these things up takes a lot of courage, because sometimes people get mad at us. Yeah. I remember one time when I saw, this was many, many years ago, you know, one monk and one nun, and they seemed to be, you know, getting a little bit too chummy. And, you know, the nun was sick, and the monk, the way he was taking care of her was not appropriate. And so I mentioned it to, you know, my teacher's attendants. I said, please tell our teacher this, because, you know, maybe he can help them. Well, later on, you know, the nun was complaining to me, oh, somebody, I don't know who, you know, went and told our teacher blah, 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 blah. And she was quite upset about it, you know. Actually, both of them wound up disrobing years later. I don't think for each other. I think the infatuation dissipated. But it was something, you know, that I really risked. Because if they had known that it was me, they probably would have gotten very mad. But I was doing it because, you know, I could kind of see what was happening. And sometimes in those situations, especially when it's attachment, we're very blind. We don't see our own attachment. Yeah. But But those, like I said, those are situations that, you know, you talk to the person's teacher, you talk to the Sangha community, you don't go gossip to other people about it. Okay? That's why it says, from now on, I shall never disparage others through exaggeration or denigration. Okay? So blaming people for things that they didn't do, or criticizing their good qualities. I mean, it's amazing sometimes when people, out of jealousy or out of hurt, or I don't even understand the motivation sometimes, criticize other people's good qualities. Yeah? And somehow a good quality becomes a bad quality, like somebody's generous, and then you start criticizing them for being too generous. Yeah? When actually, I mean, generosity is a wonderful quality. Or, you know, somebody keeps their vows very well, and then you criticize them for being too strict. You know, it's actually a good quality when somebody keeps their vows well. Okay, so this kind of thing. So it's very important to give people credit for the things that they've done, you know, rather than disparage them, give them credit and point out their good qualities. When it was saying here, you know, when others assail me with exaggeration and denigration and so on, okay, it's the weapon of evil karma returning upon me for disparaging sublime beings. It also made me think of how the communist Chinese react to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and how they call him names, and, you know, he's the splitter of the motherland, and, you know, all sorts of incredible false accusations. Yeah, and so these people are powerful people, you know, within the communist government, but they're creating so much negative karma by what they say about His Holiness that then in future lives, you know, when they finally meet the Dharma, they're going to have a really difficult time having good relationships with people and good relationships with teachers, because in this lifetime, you know, they couldn't see His Holiness as good qualities. You know, criticized his good qualities, accused him of doing things he didn't. Yeah? Or you look at Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, also quite an amazing practitioner. And in the Vietnamese War, he refused to side with either the North or the South. So both sides criticized him. Yeah? And he eventually had to leave Vietnam because of it. And he loves his country. He wanted peace in his country. But people, you know, so many people couldn't see that. And if you're not with me, you're against me. And criticized him. And so those people, you know, just create horrible karma from, you know, denigration and exaggeration of sublime beings. And then, you know, often it results in hellish rebirths. And then even they become human beings again in the future. It's difficult for them to meet the Dharma, or if they meet it, it's difficult to connect with the teacher. Okay? Or they have this situation of always being assailed themselves, with other people blaming them and criticizing them. Yeah. I mean, it's so funny when we hear about people criticizing us and gossiping about us behind our backs. You know, I just watch myself. My first reaction is, how can they do this? I didn't do that. You know? And you know, sometimes after I calm down, I realize I did do that. And sometimes after I calm down, I realize, no, they're just making up stuff, and I really didn't do that. And out of their own confusion or whatever, they're just making up stuff. But still, whether what they say is the lie or the truth, to recognize this is my karma that's created the situation. Yeah, if I hadn't created the situation from denigration and exaggeration, these people wouldn't have, you know, be doing what they're doing. So, you know, at a certain point, then you just have to sit there and go, okay, it's a fault of my own self-centeredness, and I'm glad that's ripening. Yeah. I mean, I had a situation this last summer where somebody was talking to me, to one of my teachers, and saying all sorts of very wrong things about me. You know, I checked, and no, I didn't do what this person was accusing me of. And it's not really cool to go to somebody's teacher and, you know, do that kind of stuff. I mean, because there you're really creating the karma of trying to separate teacher and student. you know. But at a certain point, you know, I just had to say, wow, this is, somebody's creating a lot of negative karma here. There's not a whole lot I can do in this situation to help because he can't listen. He can't hear. You know, and make prayers that somehow he kind of comes to and the relationship is able to be reestablished again. Okay, then verse 19. When my basic necessities waste away, it is the weapon of evil karma returning on me for being disrespectful towards others' necessities. From now on, I shall help others find their needs. So when my basic necessities waste away, so the things that you need to live on, they fall apart, or they're wasted, they're spoiled, they're stolen, a fire comes and burns them up, a flood comes and washes them away, but you know, you need food and you might have food but it gets spoiled, or you have clothes and the mice come and make a nest in it and eat it all up, or you know, you have building materials and the beavers start chomping on them, or the termites start eating them, or whatever. So the basic necessities, when they waste away and we can't get the things that we require to stay alive, you know, food, clothing, shelter, and medicine, or even we get them, somehow we're prevented from using them. They're wasted or stolen or destroyed before we can use them. So when this happens, to recall that it's the weapon of evil karma returning upon me for being disrespectful towards others' necessities. So when other people have needed things, you know, we haven't shared what we have with them, or we haven't cared that they've lacked the necessities of life. We've taken all the good things for ourselves alone, or we've stolen things from others that they need to live. We don't pay fair wages or exploit workers. Okay, so being very disrespectful towards others' necessities, you know, like going and opening a business in a third world country and really exploiting the people there and not paying them decent wages, or not taking care of the workers if they get ill when you should, or not giving them time off when they, you know, need to take care of a sick child, or when they're going to have a baby, or when they have to, you know, take care of their parents. Okay, so being quite disrespectful towards others' needs, and just thinking about, you know, myself, my profit, my good conditions. And of course, you know, these are not black and white situations, because, you know, sometimes if it's a small business situation, everybody's at risk here. But so many times, especially nowadays, people who are wealthy really take advantage of people who are poor and not care about their necessities for life. You know? And even, I mean, historically, the way people have exploited workers and exploited other people. Okay? So this is when our basic necessities go to waste or we can't use them, this is a karmic result of this kind of behavior ourselves, just thinking me and I want and I need to have. Okay? So the way we're going to change our behavior is, from now on I shall help others find their needs. So that when, you know, people have material needs, we help them find what they need. You know, to the best of our ability. It doesn't mean we have to stop everything we're doing and leave somebody else, you know, in the lurch to you know, help this one. But we do what we're able to find somebody, to help somebody find what they need. Yeah? And it's hard because sometimes we try to help somebody and, you know, we're not always successful. I had a situation, there's one nun in Mungot, a lovely nun who does very good studies, and she has a hearing problem and needs surgery, and so I finally found one woman who, you know, has said that she will help her, yeah? But then the woman, it turns out, is very, very busy and so hasn't helped this nun. And so then the nun writes to me and says, what's up? I thought you were going to help me. And I feel really kind of stuck in the middle because I've kind of written to the woman who said she was going to help it. And she's already involved in helping somebody else who, you know, I mean, it's not like this woman is being selfish. Not at all. She's being completely generous and involved in helping somebody else in India. But she just doesn't have the time and ability to help everybody all at once. So I feel a bit stuck in the middle, but it's like I did what I could, and, you know, and I really hope somebody turns up who can help this nun, because she's lovely and has the potential to be, you know, a really good teacher. She's done very well in her studies, despite the fact that she can barely hear. Yeah. Okay, then verse 20. When my mind becomes unclear and my heart unhappy, it is the weapon of evil karma returning on me for making others accumulate negative karma. From now on, I shall discard contributing to others' negative actions. Okay, so when my mind becomes unclear and my heart unhappy. Familiar experience? Ever had it happen? Okay, so when we're moody, we sit down to meditate. Our mind is like mud. It's so unclear. We just kind of can't get it. We feel like there's the words there, but we can't understand the meaning. Or our heart is unhappy. We sit down to meditate, and we just feel low energy and unhappy, and, you know, nothing's really happened, but our mind is just... you know, this kind of mind. I mean, it happens to all of us. Okay? Yeah. You know, in Dharti, when he was teaching this, he used the example of, you know, mind unclear and heart unhappy. If it's hot, we complain that it's too hot to study and practice the Dharma. But when we have the opportunity to go for entertainment, it's never too hot to do that. Okay? Or, you know, we feel that making offerings is a waste of money, but when we have the opportunity to spend the money on a vacation for ourselves, that's a good use of the money. Okay? So, these are the kinds of actions that we've done, you know, or that, well, you know, they're the kind of actions that we've done in the past, but they're also the kinds of situations we're experiencing now. It's like, you know, why, when presented with an opportunity to practice, am I falling asleep and dozing off and bored and distracted and unhappy and can't concentrate, you know? Why? Okay. Well, it's often because, you know, we've made wrong decisions in the past about what to do and what not to do. Yeah, we sit down to meditate. And it's so funny, you know, how our mind works. We sit down to meditate, and then all of a sudden, clunk, we're so dozy, you know. Just the mind is like fog, you know. Then all of a sudden, you think of food, you think of sex, boing, completely awake, you know. No problem concentrating. Food, sex, yeah, totally awake. Great visualization capacity, you know. Try and concentrate on the Buddha. Oh, the mind is drowsy. All I want to do is go to sleep, you know. I mean, you can see it in our own practice. It's right there, yeah. Okay, so why does this happen? You know, and it's useless to try and pretend that, you know, this is not our experience, you know. I mean, come on. You know, let's not pretend, oh, yes, I'm this great meditator. I never think about food and sex and this and that. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, we're samsaric beings. Okay, so when the mind's constantly dissatisfied, you know, just so dissatisfied, you're in one place and you want to be another place. You go to that place and you want to be somewhere else. And you see people like this, you know, even, I mean, you see people in worldly ways who are like this, you know. They're in a relationship with one person, they want to be in a relationship with another. So they break up the first one, go with the other one. Then they go with that one, though, they're tired of that person, go with another one. You know, or they live one place, they can't stand it, so they move to another place, and then move to another place. And then you see people in the Dharma, constant dissatisfaction. Mind unclear, heart unhappy. They go into, you know, this Dharma situation, can't stand it, complain about it. Go to that Dharma situation, oh, that's not good enough. The Dharma is greener on the other side. You know, so you go to another country to try and practice Dharma there, and then, no, that doesn't satisfy you either. They're doing it all wrong, so you go someplace else, you know, because the Dharma is greener there, and then you get there, and your heart's still unhappy, and your mind's still unclear. I mean, you see it happen to people. Okay, so why does this situation happen? Okay, it's the evil, the weapon of evil karma returning on me for making others accumulate negative karma. Okay, so what have we done in the past? We've asked others to tell lies for us. We've asked others to cheat when they're keeping the books, you know, for us. We've encouraged people to, we've been the evil friend to other people, basically. What I was just saying about wrong friend, we've been that kind of friend to other people. We've, encouraged them to do harmful things. We'll say to them, why are you going to India for His Holiness Dalai Lama's teachings when you could go to Hawaii on vacation? You know, it's so cold in India and you might get sick, and, you know, Hawaii, it's so nice. So we've said that kind of thing to other people. We've forced other people to do negative things, like maybe we've been an employer or a manager, and we've told the employees or the subordinates in our work to cheat on things, you know, to change the numbers, to overcharge the customers, to lie to customers, or we tell family members to lie. You know, somebody calls and you don't want to talk to them because you're busy doing something else, so you tell your kids, oh, tell them I'm not home. Why? Why not just tell your kids, tell them I'm busy and I'll call them back later? But, you know, telling your kids or your parents or somebody else to lie and make excuses for you, or instructing employees to do, you know, unethical practices for the sake of the business to earn more money. Telling soldiers to go out and kill. Now, being the judge, you know, that condemns somebody to death and tells the executioner to go kill that person. Yeah, I mean, think of in the prison system what's going on and how that works when there's capital punishment. Okay, telling soldiers to go and kill, or police to kill, or to beat somebody up and then to lie about it and cover it up. So whenever, you know, we're telling somebody, I mean, President Nixon, this is what he got impeached about, isn't it? You know, he was telling other people to lie and do illegal things. So, this is the kind of thing that we've done in the past by, making others or encouraging others to accumulate negative karma, and then it ripens in our own mind being unclear and unhappy. And you can see the relationship. I mean, in all these verses, can you see the relationship between what we've done and what the result is? You know, it makes sense. You know, there's a correlation there. So from now on, you know, instead of doing that, our resolve should be, I shall discard contributing to others' negative acts. So if somebody asks us to get involved in a negative action, we say, sorry, I'm not going to do it. You know, even though it might be embarrassing for us sometimes to tell the truth, we tell the truth rather than tell somebody to lie for us. Even it means we may not have as much money or as many possessions, you know, we're honest in our business dealings rather than tell somebody to cheat somebody else for our benefit. Okay, so, you know, really hold back from encouraging others to do negative actions, and in fact, to do the opposite, to encourage other people to do positive action. Yeah, and, you know, in Singapore, people would always ask me, what can I do for my deceased relative? You know, because they believe in future lives and so on and so, that, you know, kind of what can I do for my friends and relatives to help them have a better life? And so many people ask me that, and, you know, I would tell them about the practices that you can do and dedicate for the person, for the deceased one. But then I always said, the time for you to help your relatives and friends to have a good future life is now while they're alive, and help them to create good karma. You know, encourage them to be generous, encourage them to live in an ethical way, discourage their negative actions. You know, the more you can help them live, you know, a wholesome life now, then they'll have their own good karma in their own mind stream, and when they die, you won't have to worry so much about them. You know, and then when they die, your prayers can be more effective, because if somebody doesn't have enough good karma themselves, you can pray and pray and dedicate and dedicate, but they don't have much good karma to be activated. Whereas, you know, if we encourage them now when they're alive to create good karma, then, you know, they have some good karma that can be activated in the future. Yeah. That's kind of, you know, one thing that I think is nice about people coming up and helping at the Abbey, even if they're not Buddhists. It's somehow their relatives who are Buddhist, you know, say, oh, come on and help, you know, they're nice people and you feel good. And so then they come and, you know, they feel good when they're here working and, you know, they have a sense of goodness. And then they meet monastics, maybe they get some good feeling about monastics. They see the altar, they see, you know, Buddhist images. It makes them feel a little bit calm, or even it just makes them feel curious. But they've made some contact with the Dharma. Yeah. So even if they don't become Buddhists or don't come back to the Abbey, still, you know, some contact has been made, and they've offered service. And so just by offering service, you know, to help create a monastery, they've created some good karma, and that good karma's in their mind stream. Yeah. So I think, you know, that's the way, when I look at the friends and relatives who have encouraged them to come and do that, that's the way that they've helped them. You know, just to make some kind of a small connection with the Dharma. Okay. Should we do one more verse? You ready for it? Okay, verse 21. When I fail in my endeavors and feel deeply perturbed, it is the weapon of evil karma returning on me for causing obstacles to the work of the sublime ones. From now on I shall relinquish all acts of hindrance. Oops. Okay, so when I fail in my endeavors and feel deeply perturbed, okay, so whatever projects we try and do, they don't work out, they fail, you know. You're trying to open a business, you can't get it up and running. You're trying even to do some virtuous activity, you know, create a Dharma website, you can't seem to be able to do it. You know, whatever you're trying to do, it doesn't meet with success. And then as a result, you feel very perturbed, you feel frustrated, you feel misunderstood, you feel boxed in, you know. It's like you've had these expectations or you've had these goals and then nothing's actualized. You're just stymied and frustrated. So, you know, this happens all the time. You know, if you're a parent, your children don't do what you want them to do. Yeah, you want them to do something, they don't do it. You had this, you know, expectation, endeavor, you know, the family business and all the kids were going to go in it and none of your kids want to do it. Or you yourself lose your job. Things, you know, businesses fail. Things turn out exactly the opposite way than how you wanted them to do it. So all these kinds, you know, things not working out for us, okay, happens all the time. So when it happens, again, rather than complain, rather than feel sorry, to remember this is, or get angry, this is the weapon of evil karma returning upon me for causing obstacles to the work of the sublime ones, okay? So causing obstacles to the work of people who are intent on virtue, who are doing good work. So this could be disturbing the people who meditate, you know, not caring that there are meditators around and talking and playing music and being boisterous. you know, or it could be you're living in a Dharma community and the community is doing a certain Dharma action, but we don't do our part or take our responsibility. You know, everybody's preparing for, you know, Vesak Day, and we say, you know, I don't feel like doing anything, and, you know, go watch TV or whatever. You know, but just kind of causing obstacles. When somebody is doing very good work, then causing obstacles to it. Okay? Somebody's teaching the Dharma, we interfere with it. You know, we take away the place from where they're teaching so they can't teach there, or we schedule something else in you know, instead. We cause disruption to people who are studying, and, you know, we want them to do useless activities instead. We interrupt them. We make people feel bad for practicing the Dharma. You know, oh, you hurt my, you know, I had, you know, and this happens in families, you know, parents having expectations for children and then saying, you know, how can you go and desert me and practice the Dharma and not take care of me and, you know, causing obstacles in people's practice like that. Or, you know, we've given people wrong advice. So all these kinds of actions in which we've interfered with other people doing virtuous actions. This particular verse made me think a little bit about, you know, Zopa Rinpoche is doing the Maitreya project and building this 500-foot statue of Maitreya Buddha in India. And I remember 4 years ago I was at a conference of Buddhist teachers, you know, from many different traditions. And one Buddhist teacher there just lambasted the project and lambasted Rinpoche for doing this project, you know, and said, oh, it's, you know, going to destroy the environment and it's exploiting the poor people and it's taking advantage and da-da-da-da-da, and why are we building big statues and, you know, we should be putting the money into social activism and social welfare projects, you know. And in one way, you could see what this person was aiming for, because he wanted to see the money being used now for things that are helpful right now. And in his mind, you know, building statues seemed like what the Catholic Church was doing in the Middle Ages, putting all the money into the church, and meanwhile people are starving and sick and not getting the care they're needed. So I think, you know, that person was probably coming from that kind of perspective, and meant well in his own way. But the way that it was being expressed was extremely critical and very blaming. And I didn't feel it was at all appropriate. So, you know, it made me think, you know, kind of somebody talking badly about, you know, because Rinpoche's motivation is impeccable. You know, so you're talking badly about a holy being, you know. And so I began to wonder, well, does that mean that everybody has to agree that it's good to build a 500-foot Buddha statue, you know? Does that mean that if you don't agree with the project that you're causing hindrance to it? And I kind of asked the question to another one of my teachers, and it was very interesting. I mean, you can learn so much when you watch your teacher's behavior and you watch how they phrase things, you know, because, you know, I can't remember exactly what the thing was. If I said, well, what, you know, what is your idea about the statue or what? And he just said, oh, His Holiness the Dalai Lama said it's very good to help the lepers in India, and that we Buddhists should do a lot more social work. You know? And so he from that what I gleaned is that, you know, in his opinion, if it were his financial resources, he would have directed them in a different way. But that's different, you know, than criticizing somebody who is directing them in another way that is also virtuous. Okay? So you're getting what I mean? It's like you might have the same financial resources and choose to direct them differently. That doesn't mean that you're criticizing the person who wants to put the resources into building a temple or a statue or something like that. You know, you're not criticizing that people. You're not creating an obstacle for them doing their virtuous work because what they're doing is virtuous. But, you know, you are kind of reflecting that, you know, if those were my resources, I would direct them in another way. So that saying things in that way is totally different than what this other person did, this Westerner did, of, you know, just coming out and just criticizing the project, criticizing the people behind the project. Okay, do you see the difference? Mm-hmm. Yeah? So I've watched this with some of my teachers, and it's very valuable, you know, how they can get a point across to you without directly criticizing somebody, you know. And so, you know, and actually with one of my teachers, I asked that. I said, well, what happens if somebody's following a teacher who is doing really strange things? I asked my teacher this many, many years ago. And he said, well, you know, don't criticize, but state what is the proper behavior. And then, you know, leave it to people to decide for themselves. You know, so don't overtly go and go, this person, you know. But just, you know, you can state what they're doing is controversial or what they're doing is unusual or, you know, I mean, I remember in the case of, you know, there was one teacher who came out publicly denouncing His Holiness. That I feel comfortable telling somebody that this teacher did, because the teacher did it in the newspapers and everybody knows it. So I'm just relaying information, you know. If I said, you know, they you know, this person came out publicly against His Holiness, that's one thing. If I said, oh, how could he possibly do this coming out publicly and criticizing His Holiness? Who does he think he is? And he's so arrogant and he's so this and he's so that. That's, you know, definitely criticizing somebody, okay? But just, you know, stating a fact or stating something in one way, that's not being critical of it. Or stating how it, how it should be done according to, you know, the usual conventions. Or stating how you would prefer resources to be used. Or stating, you know, what you consider good conduct without directly saying, you know, that person and pointing fingers and things like that. Are you getting what I'm saying? Yeah? Right. Yeah, it's a statement as opposed to an accusation. And then you just leave it up to the other people who may or may not get it. Yeah, what more can you do? But it's also very important, you know, not to get into a real self-righteous trip, because sometimes you see people do that even in Dharma situations, you know. My teacher says things have to be done this way, and everybody who's not doing them exactly as my teacher is doing them wrong. And, you know, I mean, people can sometimes get very self-righteous. So we don't ever want to get into that kind of thing. You know, it's not at all helpful. On the other hand, you know, if somebody comes and says, well, should I go study with this person, you know, and you go, well, you know, you can't exactly say yes and encourage them to do that. That wouldn't be, you know, giving somebody, in your opinion, what wise counsel is. But you don't want to come out and openly criticize the person. So then you just have to say, well, you know, they've done, you know, there's some things that, you know, are unique about their teaching style or unconventional about their teacher, or, you know, some people consider it controversial. So, you know, you need to go and explore for yourself and check up for yourself, you know. And, you know, and just tell them it's really important to check up wisely before getting involved with a group and a teacher and stuff like that. Okay? But that's a slightly different situation than what this verse is talking about. This verse is talking about causing obstacles to the work of the sublime ones. So I just got off on a tangent there. But, you know, really when somebody's trying to do something, and like, you know, you could think of the officials in India who make many difficulties for the success of the Maitreya Project. Yeah? Causing Yeah. Or somebody is trying to open a hospital and do social welfare work, you know, or they're trying to open a halfway house for inmates, or they're trying to do some kind of virtuous work that helps society, and then you're some kind of government official that just creates one obstacle after another for these people. Okay, so that's an example, interfering with people who are trying to do virtue. So, you know, we may have done it this life, but, you know, we haven't always been Buddhists. We may have been officials in the past, or we may have been, you know, neighbors of a monastery in the past and created trouble. You know, I know one temple in Taiwan, and, you know, the nuns there are impeccable and a wonderful teacher, but the temple they have, it used to be a Taoist temple. They converted it to a Buddhist temple. Some of the people in the community are Taoist, and they create so many problems for these nuns, you know? Kind of, you know, government problems and, you know, not letting them build or, you know, just being rude neighbors and things. So, you know, we may have been born as non-Buddhists in a previous life and done this kind of thing of obstructing people who are trying to do virtue. Yeah? Yeah, you can see it, you know, people doing charity work and then you come in and you cause problems, or people trying to do prison work and they won't let you let you in. They make all sorts of things, you know, because they're scared of, you know, or whatever. Okay, so the resolution is, from now on, I shall relinquish all acts of hindrance. Okay, so from now on, when somebody's doing something that's beneficial and karmically positive, I'm not going to get in their way of doing it, you know, and I'm not going to slander them and make a big commotion about what they're doing, even if it differs from, let's say, how I would do something. And I'm going to instead do the opposite and encourage people to do virtuous actions. Okay, so making that resolution. So again, with all these verses, remember to doing the taking and giving meditation. You know, so like this one, you know, taking on the suffering of people who fail in their endeavors and feel deeply perturbed. You know, and when we feel that, and when we see other people that do that, then take on their suffering and then give them happiness. You know, and to recognize, okay, I'm experiencing this. Why? Because I've caused obstacles to the work of people doing virtue. So may I take on the suffering of all other people who, you know, are failing in their endeavors and are feeling frustrated and unhappy and misunderstood. May I take on all their negativities, and may I give them my body, wealth, and enjoyment and positive potential. And then doing the taking and giving meditation. Just sit and meditate a little bit.
Do you have this on your version? On your computer.
Sure.
And then the other thing that is coming to my mind is, I don't know if this would be helpful to include, you know, as part of the book that you have in mind, but I'd like to know how. I'd like some advice about how to meditate on this, like in a retreat. How to take it and use it as a...
Yeah. The basic thing in a retreat is, I would say, just go verse by verse and, you know, go line by line. When I fail in my endeavors and feel deeply perturbed, remember times when that's happened to you. You know, remember specific incidences when that has happened to you. And then, you know, look at your reaction, how you reacted in the past to it. And evaluate where your reactions in the past, you know, where were they coming from? Were they coming from a virtuous attitude? Were they coming from afflictions? Were you complaining? Were you feeling sorry for yourself? Were you getting angry and blaming others? You know, so to look at this, remember the specific situation, look at how you reacted, look at what was motivating your reactions, and then think, you know, because often we'll see that the way we were reacting was out of afflictions. You know, then thinking, okay, instead it's the weapon of evil karma returning upon me. What did I do? Cause obstacles to the work of the sublime ones. and then sit and review in your life and look in this life in general, you know, have you created obstacles to people who have been doing virtue? You know, somebody's been meditating and you talk right outside their room. Okay? Or, you know, stuff like that. And so think about that and do some confession and purification around that, and then make the determination from now on I shall relinquish all acts of hindrance, and then think about those situations in which you had created obstacles for others in the past, and now think, okay, if I meet these situations in the future, how do I want to act? And what kind of motivations do I want to have behind my actions? Okay? So do it for yourself. And sometimes on some of these we may not get so much from our own background, but if we open our eyes and look, we see other people who, let's say, are experiencing when my mind becomes unclear and my heart unhappy. We look at, you know, different friends we know who, you know, always continually dissatisfied, unhappy, unclear mind. And, you know, so sometimes we apply it to ourselves. Sometimes we think about other situations. Then we think about, well, how did they react? Do I ever act like that? What is the karmic cause of having acted like that? It's causing others to accumulate negative karma, you know, and encouraging them and endorsing their negative actions. So, you know, this person has done that. When have I done that? Yeah, and now on, you know, I want to abandon that kind of action. So if it's something that you haven't come across too much in your own life, you know, look at what other people have experienced and see it according there. And then check to see if you've created the cause, because we may have created the cause this life, but haven't experienced the result yet. The result is to come next life, and so we know to do some purification. And even if you check and you haven't created the cause very much in this life, you can't identify specific instances in which you've created it. You know, recall that we've had infinite beginningless lifetimes. We've probably created it then. And so still, you know, confess and purify whatever we may have done in previous lives and make a very, very strong determination. From now on, I'm not going to do that action. Even we haven't done it this lifetime. Make it a stronger determination, you know, because we never know what situation we're going to find ourselves in this life or future life. You know, and if we find ourselves in a certain situation, who knows what in the world we could do. So even we haven't done it so far, if we've seen other people do it or whatever, to make a very strong determination, I don't want to get involved in that kind of action of body, speech, and mind. Okay? And then do the taking and giving meditation. Or use it as a motivation when you do Vajrasattva or when you do 35 Buddhas. Okay? So the real key here, I think, is thinking about it very specifically, analyzing our own life. Yeah? And then it becomes really rich. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And especially in situations, you know, when we tend to have felt like we've been wronged, if we look at those situations in which we feel that others have wronged us and ask ourselves, well, what did I contribute to the situation? Or how did I react to that? Then we often see, you know, we created some karma around that. Yeah? You know, we may have done something beforehand that perpetuate, you know, that stimulated that situation, or even after it happened, we reacted in a certain way and created more karma to have it happen.